Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, founder and CEO of ScaleUp Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And today, we continue our series looking forward into 2023 and the evolution of the fintech space. And today, really stoked to have Joel on the show. Joel is the founder of GFA Exchange. And we're going to be jumping into a really important topic around financial inclusion. Joel, super excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Great. It's a pleasure to be here and look forward to kind of getting into the mix with you on this one.
Brilliant. And you know, before we jump into that, I've been asking everyone as we running through the series, what excites you about fintech in 2023? What are the things out there that really are hitting home as something to watch out in the new year?
So what really excites me, Richard, is the fact that fintech is now being seen as a real game changer in new ways. I think when it came into the space and started to disrupt traditional services, in particular, you know, traditional financial services, there was certainly almost a resistance to what is this thing doing and how is it going to affect our business, etc. I think we're now at a stage with fintech where it's reached a certain level of maturity where it's a case of we can no longer not use fintech. And in fact, for those who have been using fintech for a while, it's how they can be much more innovative with it. And I think as we go into 2023 and beyond, I think it's about how do you make fintech a tool or an element of what you do that does more than just create more money. And don't get me wrong, any business is about creating success, creating profits, and how you use that profit is up to yourself. But innovation and the technology that fintech enables can be used in so many new and exciting ways. And I think as we come into a new generation of people coming into the workforce and using fintech in the way that they are with the ideas that are being presented, there's going to be some fantastic opportunities. Definitely going to see much more increased use of blockchain, for example. Definitely going to see much more focus on sustainability. And so those are just two areas of a myriad that I think are going to become more innovative as we move forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you and I can completely agree on that. And there's just so many different use cases out there. Last week, I was talking to a few friends and the uprises of embedded finance and banking as a service and all that. All of which sort of gives, you know, the others out there, the traditionally non-financial companies, the opportunity to offer, you know, products and services that are financially capable of providing their consumers with really great products. You know, Uber's already on the way, Klarna's already offering lending capabilities, etc. So, yeah, I think it's a really exciting time as we sort of move forward into 2023. But you and I chatted a couple of weeks ago, and I think we hit on a raw subject and maybe the core of, you know, why fintech should be further adopted and should be further sort of propelled into new innovation, et cetera. And I think that's all around financial inclusion, right? You know, making certain the underbanked and the unbanked have the opportunity, as others do, to access various elements of financial services. And how do you see fintech increasing this financial inclusion? What is the mechanism that has allowed or is allowing fintech to reach those pockets that have previously obviously been underserved?
Absolutely. I mean, a great question, Richard. I think there are two elements to that, though. I think one is the fintechs themselves, and one is how fintech is being used. If I start with the latter first, I think what we're seeing at the moment is a real convergence of three key elements. We're seeing what we call internally in our business the triple D effect. And this is where we're seeing the convergence of diverse data, diverse intelligence, and diverse technologies. And so to explain that a little bit more, if you look at the number of data sources that are out there in the market for any business to use, they are vast. And traditionally, many organizations would rely on their traditional data sources in order to access the type of support or provide a type of support that they want to the type of business that's relevant for them. The problem is that itself creates a bias because you're always using the same sources, which is always going to give you the same data, which means you're always going to get the same results, which means you're always going to do the same action. And so fintech has come in and said, well, technology, as a technology and as a way of working, it enables you to access multiple data sets at scale. Now, data noise then becomes a problem because you've got so much data, you don't know what to use. But therein lies the opportunity. Because if you're very clear about what your purpose is and what your outcome is, then you can look at those different data sources and utilize them in different ways. And in doing so, that enables you to access the second D, which is the kind of diverse intelligence, because those multiple data sources unlock multiple intelligences that you wouldn't have had because you're no longer using your traditional data routes or your data sources. And so with this new level of data intelligence, it's given the opportunity to be able to provide much more value, be much more innovative, think about how you can be much more cost-effective, be more efficient, reduce risk, etc., because you've got more intelligence to make better decisions from. And then that leads you to the third D, which is the sense of diverse technologies. Because what you've got is then a myriad of ways of using fintech technologies in order to act upon that diverse intelligence that you've got. Now, for some organizations, that's an overload of data, insight, and options to use in terms of technologies. But from my perspective, that's about opportunity. This is about thinking about how do you create not a new normal, but an enhanced way of working, an evolved way of working as an organization. And I think fintech allows you to access those three elements in one combined activity in order to unlock innovation. But the other side of that coin is that the fintechs themselves need to be more inclusive. There's a challenge, I would still say, that within the fintech space, that many fintechs themselves are not diverse. There are still a limited numbers of diverse founders of fintech companies, especially in the UK. There's, as you go into maybe senior leadership teams and middle managers, you might see much more diversity in terms of leaders and staff. But what you need is as much diversity within a fintech to bring that neurodiverse thinking to align with the innovation in a new age that fintech is beginning to shape. So I think there's a balance that's needed here in terms of those in the industry, but then the way in which traditional organizations, as well as those in the industry, jump onto this kind of triple D effect of data, insight, and technology so that the actual innovation becomes sustainable for the long term. You know, it's not a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, and what you're saying here is don't just focus on the products, i.e. creating the products that serve maybe underserved markets. Also focus on the internal mechanisms and your DNA as you're growing up and make certain that you look at different parts of the market to access talent. So as you're growing up and you're looking at maybe venturing into, let's say, Africa, you have that DNA in you because you've actually gone out and source talent across the globe, and that talent can give you the insight to actually, you know, set up that product, make certain that that product is what that market needs at that point in time. Is that what we're referring to here?
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, you cannot evolve if you don't understand the markets that you're evolving into, right? And you need to integrate the learning, the cultural needs, the societal needs of these new markets more than ever before. We're no longer living in a kind of a black and white world, you know, in all shapes of the word. We're living in a world where if you're evidencing value as an organization, you have to evidence that value in multiple ways. It's not just commercial success. And I think, to be fair with you, Richard, I think the power of ESG gives a great opportunity for organizations to demonstrate that alternative value proposition. And I'm certainly, You know, I'm working on that area at the moment, looking at financial inclusion within ESG, and particularly around the S of obvious ESG and the social aspect or sustainability aspect, whichever way you look at it. And the reality is that financial inclusion under that social aspect is a massive problem for many organizations, particularly at a time those organizations are being held to account in terms of reporting on what they say they're doing. And so I think financial inclusion is now about being much more vulnerable as organizations and seeing that as a sign of strength, because it gives you an opportunity to see where your own gaps are, see where your own weaknesses are, and then actively seeking education, support, the resources necessary to find out about these new opportunities. What are the needs of the unbanked? I mean, are you expecting them to fit your profile, or are you getting a true understanding of what their needs are, and then are you meeting them where they are? How are you breaking your own bias and thinking culture in order to unlock opportunity to support the unbanked more? You know, these are questions that organizations need to be asking themselves, rather than in many ways still keeping the high ground and saying, well, we are the organization, we provide the value, this is what we do. If you want us, this is what you need to come and get. I think the world is changing. Indeed, who is the customer these days? Is it the business or is it the individual or the business?
Yeah, and I got a great example of that. Actually, a good friend of mine out in Amsterdam was running a fintech business. Actually, it was a mobile apps business. So they were a calling app. You know, back in the day, there was quite a lucrative market in the West, in Europe. But they were mostly really at the tail end of that. And although they'd invested millions of dollars into building this business, it really wasn't sort of taking off, right? And interestingly, he traveled to South Africa just on holiday and then met his new co-founder. And, you know, with the insights that his new co-founder gave him of certain pockets of Africa, they then launched that mobile app into the African market. And because the product met the needs of that particular market, it took off. And now, right now, actually, they just raised additional funding to building a payments app with inside that mobile application. And I think, just as you mentioned there, he stepped outside the box. He knew it wasn't work in Europe, and he took a chance, and he took on someone that he obviously had known, but someone with a different background, different ideas, and also a different problem to solve. And because of that, all of a sudden, one and one together equaled two rather than three or four or five. And now I know this app is actually being used in Soweto, Alexandra, and some of the townships throughout South Africa. So fully agree with you there. But not everyone's like him, right?
Agreed.
Not everyone's like him. Lots of people will just continue to go down the road and must probably potentially close the business if that's what they want to do.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
What are some of the challenges that people need to overcome in order to further foster financial inclusion? And that can go from a product perspective, you know, diversity, inclusion, socioeconomic. You know, what are the stigmas or the challenges
we need to... Again, a great question, Richard. I think if organizations are honest about themselves, I think they need to start with their leadership first. So I think we need to strip this back a little bit here. You know, if you don't have inclusive leadership at the top who are credible and can demonstrate being actively inclusive as a leader, then no matter what the organization wants to do as an entity, it's going to be challenging to be truly financially inclusive. And many leaders, let's be honest, don't want to show their vulnerability and don't want to show their inadequacy in this area if they have such things at this time. But I think it starts by having a very clear vision of who you are as an inclusive leader. and how that manifests and translates into the types of organization that you're leading and the culture that you create within the organization. So it's about being very clear about your what versus your why. Why do you want to be financially inclusive? Is it because it's flavor of the month, or is it because you truly believe in the outputs that you want to achieve for those who are in need of support, those who are underserved or underrepresented? You know, once you understand your what versus your why, the what starts taking care of itself because it's being driven from a new purpose position. But then it's also about being clear about the focus around that, because when it comes to creating change, one has to be focused to see that through. And in a new area for some organizations, it's going to be challenging to face those hurdles as they go along trying to achieve this new purpose. So that relentlessness and focus is going to be key as a combined feeling. But then also it's about that motivation and how do you instill that motivation within your team when they face those challenges and trying to drive that through? How do you create a much more accountable and responsible culture for financial inclusion if that is serious to you as an organization? And that's just the starting point. You know, once you get into the mix of, okay, so what does your governance structure need to look like? What does your processes and systems need to look like? You know, who are the stakeholders that you're engaging as you're trying to develop these systems and processes, so you're making sure you're tailoring services directly for those individuals who have those needs? You know, how are you getting their intelligence in the heart of your strategy, heart of your policy? These are real questions that change the way in which organizations operate. And so it's whether you have inclusive leadership at the top that's really clear about driving that through. So before you start talking about products or services or engagement, have you got the right kind of leadership in place in the first place? And that's a hard question to ask.
It is a hard question to ask. It takes some soul searching. It takes some soul searching to figure that out and also ask yourself the question, you know, is this where I want to go? Is this what I want to do? And I know, I definitely know some of the my podcast guests over the last few years have done some brilliant stuff, honestly, some really interesting stuff in this space. I know the guys at Zuma are really big advocates of this type of change and continue to develop and build out on that path. And that's, you know, purely because of Nick and his affinity with emerging markets and what they need and what they want. So, you know, I agree with you. You sort of got, you got to start at the top and then work your way down. But as we look into the new year and, you know, things that are coming up, how can technology, rather than people, how can technology help us create that pathway to a more inclusive financial ecosystem?
Again, not skirting the question, but people create technology, right? So it starts from people first for me every single time. That being said, I think the technology enables you to become much more efficient and cost effective if used correctly. Now, I've never been an advocate for technology replacing people, but ultimately there are tasks that people do that technology could automate and make a lot more easier in terms of getting done and increase productivity, etc. But yeah, I certainly think that technology can cut through some of the traffic. Digital technologies and the ability to connect with individuals is much more easier these days. I think mobile technologies, you've got to see an evolution of mobile technologies in terms of helping people to connect to what they need in terms of services or products in order to better their lives. Analog phones in some countries is a lifeline for many organizations. You know, we talk about Android and Apple and kind of the latest technologies. In some countries, they've got phones that we were using in the early 90s. Yet that is their lifeline. So how do we make sure our technologies are compatible with what they have rather than expecting them to use some of the latest things, for example? I think from an organizational standpoint, I think it gives an opportunity for an organization almost do a technology audit on where they are and link that to where they want to be and then to see what their technology needs are going to be. So I think, you know, CIOs and CTOs are going to play a huge part in 2023 in helping to shape what new technologies look like, or indeed how technologies are being used in this space. Finally, I think it's about mapping, as I said earlier, what success means to you now in this day and age, what value you're trying to provide as an organization, and how technology can be used to access that quicker, faster than ever before. But I think in itself, technology is just an enabler. It's not all about the tech. So, you know, as I say, not skirting the question, so to speak, but I think you need the right people who can really be clear and can articulate how technology is enabling change, not all about the tech itself. And it's the shaping of the tech alongside purpose, alongside goals, alongside objectives, alongside business and social value that's really got to decide what type of tech you need, how it needs to work, how you can measure impact. One thing I would say, though, Richard, is going to become even more important, I would say also, is data. We know the proliferation of data is huge already, but it's going to become even more important when it comes to financial inclusion, because a lot of the data that businesses may need may not be able to be accessed in the traditional ways that they try and access data at the moment. So they need to get more information about businesses. I mean, for example, here in the UK, if you look at ethnic minorities in business, they currently contribute anywhere between 13 to 25 billion pounds a year to UK GDP. If they were supported at the same rate as non-ethnic minority founders, they contribute anywhere between 180 to 200 billion to the UK GDP. That's one diversity characteristic group. So we're not talking about females, we're not talking about, you know, those who might register with a disability. We're not talking about intersectionality between diverse characteristics. And that's just standard diversity characteristics. When you start looking at underserved markets, underserved communities, there's so much opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. I like what you said, though. It is definitely people-led, but there are technologies out there that can definitely pave that pathway and create a more inclusive ecosystem. And as we look to wrap up this episode, it's 2023. What do you want to say to those fintech leaders out there as they, you know, shoot out the starting blocks for this year?
I'm hesitating, Richard, because I think if we look at the last two and a half years, the world has gone through a traumatic time and arguably still reeling from that. And I think what that period did, it gave everyone an opportunity to really reflect on what's really most important to them, to really reflect on their values, reflect on what they're doing, why they're doing it, what they want to do for the future, recognizing that time is time. You know, that's the one thing you can't afford to get back once you've spent it. And so as we go into 2023, I would say to fintech leaders, is be very clear about how you're using your time. If you're investing time and resource in building a great organization, what are you building it for? Not why are you building this organization? Is it because you want to be commercially successful? There's no problem with that. There's no issue with that at all. But what else? What's your real drivers? Because in the time that we all have as businesses and as individual people, and without getting all philosophical about it, the reality is that what you do with your time is going to be more important than ever before. And so when you're looking at your organization and you're looking at the things that you're building, right down to the code that you're putting in to design your technologies, or indeed the APIs you're designing, the data you're bringing in, whatever you're doing, you know, whatever banking services you're trying to build, whatever it is, really think about what value are you really trying to create? Because money follows value anyway. So if you're building something of value, you'll earn the money that you want to earn. Otherwise, you know, the market doesn't pay for nothing that's not valuable. So I'd say for fintech leaders, think about what value means, why are you doing what you're doing, and make sure you integrate that into the development of the technologies you're creating. And don't be afraid to be a rebel with that.
Yeah, great advice there. And for anyone that's out there and wants to link up with you guys, what's the best mechanism? Is it LinkedIn? Is it email addresses? How can people get in touch?
Yeah, if they want to contact me directly, I'm on LinkedIn, Joel Blake OBE. The business is www.gfaexchange.com. Yeah, feel free just to get in touch. Happy to have a conversation. Look, always looking to collaborate with right organizations who are really passionate about this area. And yeah, it's about getting a real balance between social value and commercial value. And I'm always looking to collaborate with leaders who think the same.
Yeah, brilliant. So really nice to have a chat with you today. And folks, we'll be back next week with more insights from other fintech leaders as to what's going to be happening in fintech in 2023. Looking forward to chatting to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Fintech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.